What is Mary doing walking there in the dark? Why has she shown up empty-handed and alone, slipping through stone streets towards this mountain of graves? What is she doing here? Or perhaps it's better to ask, whom is she looking for? Eventually, that question will be spoken into the terror of this night. Mary stumbles on to Jesus' open grave and she runs, shaking and panting, into the homes of the disciples where they are cowering and hiding. And she tells them what she has seen. They must have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him. They must be grave robbers or Roman soldiers. Those who wish to deliver one last humiliation to these foolish believers. And so Peter and another disciple, they also run. They run. They see. One believes, one returns, neither understands. But it's Mary who remains. And she is alone again until she realizes that she is not. Weeping, crouched on the ground, she manages to turn her eyes into the tomb. And that's where she sees these neatly folded clothes that wrapped around the body of Jesus. Who would waste time to fold this swath of cotton as they race to take out this body without being discovered? But she barely has time to consider this question before something stranger. Two angels there on either side of the tomb. They also have questions, but no answers. Woman, why are you weeping? And just then she turns. Behind her, the mouth of the cave is filling with the first light of dawn, and she sees the silhouette of a man. A gardener, she thinks, her eyes weak from weeping and the light low. And there's another question. Whom are you looking for? This is a question that echoes through John's gospel. This is the third time it is spoken by Jesus. In the very first chapter of this story about Jesus coming in as God to live among us, we meet two of John the Baptist's disciples. They're standing beside John when Jesus walks by, and they begin to follow after Jesus. And when he notices them, he turns, and Jesus speaks to them. Whom are you looking for? These are the first words spoken by Jesus in the Gospel of John. The calling of the first disciples, the morning of the resurrection. These are strange junctures to be asking questions. Because if you want to build a movement, if you want to get people to pledge their allegiance, to be willing to die for you, you need answers, not questions. In fact, it's best to have a speech ready. We shall go on to the end. We shall fight France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans, says Winston Churchill. Give me liberty or give me death, Patrick Henry. And if you live in the first century, and if you want your news to be taken seriously, if you want to instill obedience and fear, you do not announce yourself to a lone single woman in the dark. Somehow, outside the cave of the tomb, it is not time for answers. At least Jesus could have said, "It's me you're looking for." At least at this crucial moment, he could give them some sense of what is going on. And instead, Jesus diverts to a question. It turns out that Jesus' resurrection needs no explanation. It turns out that Jesus' resurrection requires no defense. Do you remember how John's gospel begins? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and without him, not one thing came into being. John announces this as a fact. As concrete as the sun rising in the morning and setting in the evening, this is the shape of the universe. The resurrection needs no explanation, and it needs no defense. If Mary had run from the tomb and not returned, if the disciples refused to visit the tomb, it would be no less true that Jesus was risen from the dead. It would be no less true that God so loved the world that God sent Jesus into the world to redeem the world. The question, who are you looking for, comes not for Jesus. It is a question for us. When I was little, my dad had this amazing, gigantic beard. In pictures from this time, he bears a striking resemblance to Chewbacca from Star Wars. And I have this memory, it's probably the earliest memory I have, of coming home to find a stranger living in my house. This man was completely shaven with this crisp haircut, and yet the stranger was holding his arms out to me as if I would come to him. I backed up slowly towards my mother as the shorn man tried to explain to me that he was my father. I had come looking for someone, and I was startled and disturbed when I found someone else. This question comes up over and over in the Gospel of John, because what you find is not always what you were looking for, what you expect. And then the question is, what do you do when you have found it, when you have found him there so different than you expected? We have always known who he is. He's told us from the beginning, I am the light of the world. I am the good shepherd. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the true vine. His life of healing and hope, in miracles and weeping over his dead friend, in shared meals and teaching, we have seen all along who he is. But whom are you looking for? Who are you seeking? I mentioned that this question is spoken three times in John's gospel. The first to Jesus' disciples, the last time to Mary. But in the middle, it is posed to one other person, to Judas. It is evening, and Jesus has gone with the disciples to a garden. And suddenly, a band of soldiers appear, spears in hand. And Jesus turns to Judas and says, whom are you looking for? And Judas replies, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus then speaks in an echo of God's announcement of God's self to Moses. I am he. Whom are you seeking? Because whatever you come seeking of Jesus, you will find it. If you're looking for a quick payday through the betrayal of a failed revolutionary, he will be that. If you're looking for a prophet or a guru, you can find it in his life. If you're looking for a dead body, you will leave the empty tomb with this belief intact, distraught that thieves have taken him away. But beloved, if you come to find the living among the dead, the one who is life, if you come with your heart in your hand, with only a seed of hope that what you see is not what is there, if you come seeking like Mary, you will find him. Unlike the other gospels, Mary brings nothing to the tomb. She has absolutely no reason to be there. She has brought nothing to anoint the body. She brings no friends to perform these rituals of mourning. And once she sees the open tomb, suspects grave robbers, reports the theft, for some reason, she comes back. She comes back again. In spite of everything she's seen, despite her misgivings, despite her doubt, Mary comes with a sliver of hope, with a kernel of expectation that maybe, just maybe, there is something more to this story than death. It is fascinating that John's gospel begins with this massive cosmic pronouncement, the first words about creation and time and God's being. But the gospel ends here with one woman alone in the dark. It ends with a question that is presented by the word itself to her. And when she cannot find the words, when she cannot understand, she is reminded by him. She's looking for the one who knows her name. She's seeking the one who will tell her that the story of occupation and terror and threat that surrounds her life, this isn't the shape of the universe. It turns out that she's loved. And that love is strong enough to neutralize death both now and forever. And that recognition, that reshapes everything for Mary and those of us who live here today because of her witness. For the next 400 years, Christians would engage in all sorts of strange behavior. They would refuse to serve Caesar. They wouldn't go to war anymore because Jesus taught them to love their neighbors as themselves. They were recorded as engaging in the strange nonsense of taking in orphan children. And they would stay during a plague to take care of the sick, even if it made them ill and they died. Because they lived as if all of this was true, every word of it. They lived lives that said death no longer held power to determine their decisions, because the shape of the universe is healed. They lived as if someone had risen from the grave and had said their name. This Easter, we are still left with no evidence, no scientific explanation, no speech to rally us to action. This Easter, we are brought before the question that is still spoken to each of us, that calls us to answer from the deep well of our hearts, from our own longing. The question lingers 2,000 years later. Whom are you looking for? Amen.